Welcome to Talk Nation Radio, a half-hour discussion of politics as if the people mattered. I'm David Swanson.
I am delighted to welcome to Talk Nation Radio this week, Sarah Thompson. Sarah is the Executive Director of Christian Peacemaker Teams. You can find out more at cpt.org. Sarah, welcome to Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
So for people who don't know a lot about Christian Peacemaker Teams, it's, I guess, been around since 1984. And how long have you been part of it, and how did you get involved?
I learned about CPT in high school, and that was by someone who was a CPTer in the area, a reservist, coming to school and sharing with us about how our Mennonite High School in northern Indiana wasn't the first thing on that land, and shared with us about the indigenous people of that land, not only as history, but also living in vibrant cultures, that if we wanted to be whole people living in that place of northern Indiana, it would behoove us to learn about our Potawatomi neighbors and ancestors, and so that was a really meaningful experience. I also noticed that Christian Peacemaker Teams was involved not only in strategic nonviolent intervention in various areas around the world and here in North America, but also that they challenged militarism and really lived an alternative to a war-making system. Christian Peacemaker Team was catalyzed into being by the question, what if Christians and other people of faith who hold peace as central to their faith tradition and not as an optional extra, what if they were willing to train as hard for that peace and peacemaking work as militaries train for war? And what if individual peacemakers were willing to give it all for the cause? In many ways, like soldiers, are demanded to give it all for the cause of war. I would add, what would happen if we as individuals and as a society dedicated as many resources to experiments in nonviolent peacemaking as we as individuals in a society dedicate towards violent, destructive experiments? What could happen? So CPT is an experiment in building partnerships that transform the violence and oppression that and are committed to nonviolent work in the world and in our own personal lives.
Well, we, of course, are still miles away from devoting anything remotely like what we put into militarism to peace work, but you have a start and you have a model. According to your website, you've got 30 full-time peacemakers and about 200 volunteers. Is that right?
That's correct. And we work in different projects around the world and here in North America where we are invited. And that invitation is crucial because we work alongside people who are already organized, nonviolently resisting oppression that they face. For example, we work alongside farmers in Colombia as they return to their land, and often they're finding that there are multinational corporations coming, and that land is being bought out from under them, and the land that they use to grow food will be used to grow export crops such as palm oil. And so we challenge this use of land, especially as it relates to the fact that the reason these corporations can come in as such is because of the 50-year civil war that has displaced many people and created a weak state and put people in situations that are very desperate. So communities that are already organizing and committed to nonviolence are the type of communities that we partner with. And we will walk alongside people as they move through very dangerous areas. And we are eyes and ears of the international community. So some people say, wow, CPT, you're so brave. But really, the bravery is of the communities themselves. And we are there to witness that, to participate with them, and to reinforce one another and encourage one another in our commitment to peacemaking. In northern Iraq, for example, communities that are living an alternative to ISIS, communities that are building inclusive, multi-faith ways of being. Not everyone in northern Iraq is running around with a gun. Many people are committed to helping one another survive and thrive in that place. That includes being able to have access to their ancestral land. So we work alongside Kurdish folks there as they report bombs that come across the border and as they are committed to not leaving their land.
Are there examples you can point to of successfully reducing violence and discouraging violence and warfare through this work that you've achieved already?
There are many specific examples that I could point to. One is in Vieques, off the coast of Puerto Rico, where the United States was doing bomb testing. We accompanied communities in Puerto Rico that were directly affected by those bombs. And we were able, together, to get that bombing reduced and ended. Also, in Colombia, the farmers of the Las Pavas community were successful in holding the multinational corporation Dabon accountable for what it was doing. Dabon was connected with the body shop, and we told body shop executives what was happening in the name of that company, which purports to be ethical and green. We worked together alongside those farmers for over a year and a half, both standing in front of the tractors and the bulldozers as they came to plow over those lands and as they sought to rip up banana plants and scatter the cacao bushes. And we also did direct sit-in and alerted body shop customers to what their purchases were supporting. After a year and a half of pressure, the body shop did cut the contract with Dabon. And Dabon therefore had to pull out and the farmers got their land back. That community has recently received the Colombian version of the Nobel Prize and was recognized for their consistent and persevering efforts in this regard. The other thing I would say is that not only when nonviolent campaigns are successful, although compared to violent campaigns, they tend to have a double rate of success, a community is often stronger after coming together to find ways that include many aspects and sectors of the community together to resist violence. It creates connection. It creates confidence. It encourages creativity. And so nonviolence has many more implications, not only whether you're particularly successful on the one demand that you have or not. It's about building a movement and finding ways that we can resolve conflict without eliminating one another. And Christian Peacemaker Teams has learned a lot from many people around the world and here in North America about how to resist ecological devastation and cultural destruction through work together in nonviolence.
Is part of the work simply being present as Westerners, as human shields where violence is happening?
That is an important part of the work, yes. CPTers come from 20 different countries, though primarily the United States and Canada. And we primarily work in areas where Canadian and U.S. foreign policy have significantly negatively impacted local populations. So our work there as Westerners, as you said, would be to be a commentary on Western policy. It is not so much that we come as saviors. Not at all. Sometimes Western foreign policy and military policy conveys that type of idea. We come as friends and we come repentant for the impact, particularly of our military, on situations and on vulnerable people abroad. So we come to learn, we come to listen, and we do recognize that what we can do is not always so much right there in the field. We can very much be present there. But our work continues when CPTers return home and find ways to advocate and to really tell the story of peacemaking that's happening. Because at times, peace is the untold story.
Do you tend to get these invitations from communities that where there are Christians abroad or from people of all different backgrounds and religions and ethnic groups?
We get invitations from so many people from different walks of life. Christian Peacemaker Team does not proselytize, and we have excellent working relationships with people of many faith backgrounds. Our commitment respects that God leads each one of us respectfully, and we draw from the depths of our tradition and invite others to draw from the depths of theirs to really expose what is healthiest and most holy about what we can learn within our traditions, about how to live well together on this planet, regardless if we have different or similar truth claims. It's been an awesome process to work in this way, multi-faith and interfaith, because at this time, religion is being blamed for so many of the crises in the world. And so we want to be an example that says that the depth of faith is actually not supporting violence. The center of our faith is not violence and greed and consumerism. It is generosity and nonviolence and invitation for life together. And so really many have had their faith increased as they've been a part of this work, to see that there are so many beautiful resources within faith to help us refuse to eliminate our conversation partners, to help us turn toward one another in very difficult circumstances, to help us glorify God and to respect and work with the earth rather than destroy and put God in a box or narrow anything. It's been very much a process of opening and working together.
We are speaking with Sarah Thompson, who is the Executive Director of Christian Peacemaker Teams, and the website is cpt.org. Sarah, is a lot of the work telling victims' stories so that we hear them back here? I've seen Christian Peacemakers Teams mentioned in various news reports. I saw a news story from this past weekend of an incident in Jerusalem where the reporter was quoting a member of a Christian Peacemakers Team. Is part of the mission to come back and tell victims' stories? And if so, how successful is that?
Yes, peace is often the untold story. And there are many peacemakers out there who are not on the mainstream news. And so it is very important to us to amplify the voices of those who are not heard. People around the world are being victimized by the impact of military and other armed actors, but many of them, while being victimized, refuse to be victims and continue to speak out to whoever is listening. And so we are committed to amplifying their voices so that other perspectives can be heard, particularly the perspectives of those most affected by the violence. It is very important to hear these stories, and anyone can join our mailing list. But in addition to that, it is one thing to hear the stories, to read them. It's another to come and visit. And so CPT brings people on 2-week-long delegations where you can stand alongside peacemakers in northern Iraq, First Nations leaders in the northern Great Lakes region, farmers in Colombia, school children in Palestine that have to pass through Israeli military checkpoints to and from school, and other Israeli peacemakers who seek an end to the occupation. Come and visit. Come and hear the stories for yourself. And CPTers will guide you through those places and invite you into deeper connection with your world.
Your website, cpt.org, explains how people can join in one of these delegations and then consider becoming more of a permanent part of Christian Peacemaker Teams. But it says that you welcome both Christians and other people of faith, which seems to mean everybody except people like me who are not people of faith. What about us?
Well, what CPT asks is that people are articulate about what is deepest for them. What beyond the material, beyond the tangible, can motivate them for the long haul? There are a number of organizations that do this work very well from a secular perspective. And we often partner with these types of organizations, such as Peace Brigades International or Nonviolent Peace Force. Anyone, of course, is welcome on a delegation. And then in mutual discernment with CPT, we can decide if this type of community, if this experiment, this expression of nonviolence will be the best one. We're open. No question is off the table in CPT. So let's continue to have that conversation. But particularly, we want to identify the ways in which power has functioned through our religious communities and spend significant time thinking about that, critiquing that, praying together, and developing other spiritual practices that help us to do this work the best that we can.
It's not easy work, and it's not always very safe work. It involves a lot of danger, especially perhaps for those of us who view death as a very bad thing. You've had members kidnapped and killed. How have you handled that, and how has the work continued in the face of that?
We are currently commemorating 10 years of the hostage crisis that you speak about in Iraq. In Iraq, we were there before this most recent U.S. invasion, participating with others, being present as human shields and also as documenters of people who were returning from U.S. military facilities particularly, but also other ones, as it seemed that they were exhibiting aspects of having been tortured and things of that nature. And so we were documenting, because that's what we could do as an international community. We were documenting what people's experiences were. And when those pictures broke from Abu Ghraib, those were not CPT pictures. However, CPT had done a lot of background work already and submitted documentation to embassies and to international NGOs. And so our data was helpful in documenting what those images were showing. We continued in that work, and during Great Delegation, four people were held hostage. CPTers, as they prepare and as we do our training, we think about the aspects of things that could happen to us. And we seek to, well, rid ourselves of the fear of death. And when you do not have a fear of death, a lot of things can open for you. However, some of us, we still carry that fear. And that fear is real, and that fear is instructive. However, what we work on together is how to have just a bit more courage than that fear. That's what keeps us going. So the people who were in that situation were certainly prepared for what the consequences may be. Though I must say, we've had a lot less peacemakers killed as we have moved into these scenarios unarmed than soldiers who have been killed. So one could say unarmed peacemaking in Iraq is safer than armed peacekeeping or armed military activity. What we have seen instead is that so many people have taken care of us. We had another delegation that had a terrible road accident as a result of debris from a military incursion. They were taken in Rutba, and brought back to health, just steps away from a hospital that the U.S. had bombed, and so they had set up hospital beds and tents outside, and they nursed us back to health. That has been much more our experience. Incredible generosity of people around the world, and an incredible challenge to us to return to our home countries and get this war stopped.
People seem to be more offended, more outraged by the idea of sending in unarmed, nonviolent peace workers, peacemakers who might be killed than sending in soldiers. Somehow the fact that the soldiers are also killing people makes their being killed less offensive to people. And yet you make an incredibly important point that it's safer to go in as a peace worker. You're less likely to be killed than going in as an armed soldier escalating the violence. Do you find the same reaction I do from people, and how do you address it?
Well, often people see our work as very brave. And I want to say, you know what? Who is really brave are the people on the ground day in and day out who, without the protection of international appearance or passport, are consistently working for peace. And it is an honor to work alongside them, to amplify their voices in other contexts, and to learn from them what are the skills and the knowledge and the practices that we need to have so that we might also be stronger people, so that we might also buffer against greed, reduce our consumption, and protect our hearts from fear, which is being fed to us from many fronts. And so the important part is, if you want to learn, if you want your heart to grow, come and do CPT, because it's an experiment in building partnerships that will change your life. You will make lifelong friends and probably some frenemies too. But the opportunity to work together towards the world that we want to see is beautiful. I wouldn't want to be doing anything else.
You actually wrote a short article in your latest newsletter, and I've been getting CPT emails for years with all of these wonderful stories in them, but you wrote about a delegation going to West Papua. Can you describe briefly what's going on there and what you participated in as a delegation?
West Papua, which is on the eastern side of the Indonesian archipelago, is like the Palestine of the Pacific. In many ways, the Indonesian efforts in West Papua, moving in to extract resources from large mines, moving Indonesian population from Java and other islands into West Papuan space, seeking to get as much of the land with as few of the Papuans as possible, and having military installations, very militarized area in Indonesia. There are some religious elements as well happening, though that is not the root. So we observe the impact of this military occupation. We observe the impact of 29 or more nonviolent activists having been killed in the last number of years by military detachments trained in Australia and other places, supposedly doing counterterrorism and counterinsurgency. But the West Papuans are struggling for self-determination. They've been struggling for that since 1961. This is a moment in the movement for nonviolent organizations to coordinate more, and a moment where West Papuans are calling the rest of the world to pay attention to this struggle, which has environmental, social, and other implications. And so we have 5 CPTers trained in Australia, and rather than, you know, them going really far to other parts of the world to do this type of Christian peacemaker team work, they wish to be able to act closer to home in a regional way. And this is a larger moment in the Pacific in general, as the United States talks about this pivot toward Asia and the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. It is starting to ring bells for many activists who were involved in Latin American solidarity, because many of the same elements in the destabilization of various countries in Latin America are repeating themselves in the Pacific. And we know more now as activist movements for peace. So this is a moment to apply our knowledge to what's happening in the Pacific. The Filipinos have been leaders in helping make connections. And I would say, by way of analogy, this is part of what I was learning there. But what it felt like, and having been raised somewhat more in the Latin American solidarity movement, I felt like the way that the United States, and to a lesser extent Canada, relates to Latin America and the Caribbean is similar to how Australia, and to a lesser extent New Zealand, relate to Indonesia and the Pacific. So we're looking at patterns of interaction and looking at ways in which we can advocate for just policies that do not result in corporate deregulation, environmental catastrophe, social implications for small farmers everywhere, and the destabilization of many democratically forming societies. So I was looking at the connections there in West Papua, invited by Papuan nonviolent activists who seek the opportunity to self-determine their future as part of the Pacific.
We are almost out of time, and this is probably too big a question, but I have to ask because I don't know the answer myself. What do you say to people who say that the peace work is wonderful, but religion and religious divides contribute to war and war propaganda, and you could be doing as much harm as good by spreading peace and religion. How do you answer that?
I answer that by saying we don't spread anything. We are working alongside people who are committed to nonviolently resisting oppression, and we are fed by our religious traditions to recognize that the center of our faith is not violence and greed and consumption, but the center of our faith is nonviolence and generosity and the invitation to live well together. Yes, religions have been instrumentalized to cause tremendous violence and tremendous oppression, and our work is to be a different version, is to be something that calls that violence out as heretical, that calls that violence out trying to mask itself in the name of religion and say that is not religious, that is not holy, that is not of God. For example, the definition of jihad means struggle, and the nonviolent struggle or nonviolent jihad is possible. What anyone with a gun and the name of God is doing is not, at its heart, religious. It is using religion to hurt others and to continue dominating. And this is not about domination. Our faiths are about cooperation. They're about living well with the divine, with the land, with one another and oneself. So our work, hopefully, is to talk back to the use of religion by violent actors, calling people to meet again in a new way, themselves and one another and God and the earth, and that this does not need to involve violence at all.
Sarah Thompson, with Christian Peacemakers Team, I wish we could go on. We're out of time. You have a big event coming up in Detroit this summer that people and groups might want to be part of, and we'll post a link at talknationradio.org. The website is cpt.org. Sarah, thank you very much for coming on Talk Nation Radio.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll see everyone in Detroit, because Detroit is going through a neo-colonial struggle right now, where corporations and local actors from outside are trying to get as much of the resources of Detroit and land of Detroit as possible with the fewest amount of current Detroiters possible. And so the question of water and water justice is critical. Right here on the corner of this Great Lakes, the largest freshwater system in the world, if the most marginalized Detroiters can be denied water, what then for the rest of the country? What then for the rest of the world? So, yes, come join with us. Let's look at Detroit through international perspective together, drawing from the depths of our faith and consciousness to see what might be possible.
This is Talk Nation Radio. I'm David Swanson. Take action at rootsaction.org. Help end war at worldbeyondwar.org. All past shows can be heard at davidswanson.org. Talk Nation Radio is produced in Charlottesville, Virginia, and syndicated by Pacifica Network. If you are listening to a nonprofit station, please support that station. Talk Nation Radio is funded by contributors at davidswanson.org. There is no way to peace. Peace is the way. Until next time.